The rope was heaved over the side. The man caught it, and two crewmen pulled him to the stern and heaved him aboard. He was a dark-skinned man who wore a ship officer's uniform. Hardly expecting to see a survivor this late in the game, McDermott looked at the man questioningly. "May I ask where you came from?" The stranger unleashed a wide-toothed smile. "I thought that was obvious. I am, or rather was, the Emerald Dolphin's passenger relations officer. I fell and struck my head while helping passengers onto the research vessel. Everyone must have thought I was dead and left me. When I woke up, you had the ship under tow. My name's Sherman Nance." After Nance was escorted below by the cook, Brown peered at the captain. Uncanny that he survived a fire of such magnitude without a singed eyebrow or a burned finger. McDermott rubbed his chin doubtfully. "Yes, uncanny." Then he sighed. "It's not our concern. I now have the distasteful duty of notifying the directors that we lost our tow and their expensive cable." As soon as the Audacious reached Wellington, New Zealand, the man McDermott had pulled from the sea disappeared. The dockside immigration official swore that he hadn't left the ship down the gangway. McDermott decided the only way for Sherman Nance to have left the ship was over the side when they pulled into harbor. After McDermott gave his report to insurance investigators, he was told that no crewman or officer named Sherman Nance was listed as having served on board the Emerald Dolphin. While the Earl of Wattlesfield stood by, the crew of the Deep Encounter homed in on the signal beacons of the drifting submersibles and lifted them back on board. Once they were secured, the two ships resumed their course toward Wellington. Dead tired, Pitt straightened up his cabin from the mess made by the 40 people who had somehow managed to pack into the small enclosure during the cruise ship's evacuation. His muscles ached, a condition he noticed creeping on him with age. He threw his clothes in a laundry bag and stepped into the small shower, turning on the hot water so it sprayed into one corner as he lay on his back on the floor with his long legs extending up to the soap dish. In that position, he promptly dozed off for 20 minutes. Coming awake, fully refreshed but still sore, he soaped and rinsed before toweling dry, stepping out of the shower and staring into the mirror above the brass sink. He lightly ran the fingers of one hand over the several scars spread across his body, reminders of his many adventures during his 2 decades of service with the National Underwater and Marine Agency. Though he had attended the Air Force Academy and still held a commission as major in the Air Force, he had jumped at the chance to serve under Admiral James Sandecker and the newly formed Oceanographic and Marine Science Agency. Never married, he had come close during a long-running relationship with Congresswoman Lauren Smith, but his job at NUMA and hers in Congress were too demanding for marriage. Two of his former loves had died under tragic circumstances, Summer Moran in a devastating underwater earthquake off Hawaii, and Maeve Fletcher, shot by her sister off the coast of Tasmania. It was Summer who never ceased to haunt Pitt's dreams. He always saw her swimming into the depths to find her father, who was trapped in an underwater cavern, her lovely body and flowing red hair vanishing into the green water of the Pacific. When he'd reached the surface for air and found her gone, he tried to dive back, but the men in the boat that rescued him knew it was hopeless and physically restrained him from returning. Since that time, he had lived only for his work on and under the water. The sea became his mistress. Except for his home in an old aircraft hangar on one corner of Washington's Ronald Reagan Airport, which contained his car and airplane collection, he was always happiest when on a research ship sailing the oceans of the world. He sighed, put on a terrycloth robe, and lay down on his bed. He was about to drift off into a deserved sleep when the girl with her father's leather case jumped into his mind. The more he thought about it, the less it made sense that she had left in one of the container ship's boats without his seeing her. Then it became obvious. She hadn't left. She was still hiding somewhere on board the Deep Encounter. Ignoring the allure of sleep, he came off the bed and quickly dressed. 5 minutes later, he began his search at the stern end of the platform deck, peering into every nook and cranny in the generator room, winch room, propulsion motor room, and scientific equipment storeroom. He checked out the repair parts storeroom and almost missed it. That little something seemingly out of place. He noticed several gallon cans of various lubricating oils, all neatly stacked on a workbench. He knew they should have been stored in a wooden storage crate. He walked over to the crate and eased open the lid. Kelly Egan was sleeping an exhausted sleep so sound she did not perceive Pitt's presence. The leather case was propped against the side of the crate, and one of her arms hung over it. He smiled, removed a clipboard from a bulkhead hanger, tore off a page from the pad, and wrote a note. "Dear lady, when you wake, please come to my cabin on deck level 2, number 8. Dirk Pitt." As an afterthought to entice her, he added, "Food and drink will be waiting." He laid the note gently on her chest, softly closed the lid to the crate, and stepped from the parts room.